Before we begin, I wanted to give a huge shout out to Amazon Music for partnering with us on this episode of Three Techies Banter. But you'll hear more about this later on the episode. Let's get right into today's episode.
Hi, I'm Samiran.
Hi, I'm Nilesh.
Hi, I'm Sheetal. And you're listening to 3TB.
Three Techies Banter.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Three Techies Banter, the podcast where we talk about technology in a fun way. We try to make it simple, make it exciting, and inspire all of you. But not all our topics are all fun. We also kind of do some slightly serious things. One of the things that, Nilesh, Sheetal and I have been very, very fascinated with is this whole space of digital public infrastructure. And, we've done episodes on our own, and then we've got people like Pramod Varma and Shankar in to talk about Aadhaar, UPI, DigiLocker, credentials, the work that's being done in education. We also, of course, took a little crack at our understanding of ONDC. Then we realized that number one, we probably didn't know much. And number two, we probably did it too early, which was kind of last year. And a lot has happened since then. So what we thought would be really nice for everyone, just given the fact that it's such an evolving field, is to get someone from ONDC to come talk with us about how it has been, their experiences around. And we were very fortunate to get Shirish Joshi, who is the Chief Business Officer of ONDC. And thank you, Shirish, for kind of agreeing to be on the show, despite all that the stuff that's actually going on with G20, digital public infrastructure, and all the events that you have going on. So thank you so much for coming on. And maybe we'll just jump right into it and, ask you, what really got you to ONDC? What's been, you've obviously had a very illustrious career so far, but what attracted you to ONDC? What is it about ONDC that made you think that, this is the place where I think I will, make my mark now?
No such lofty thinking when I joined there. And I must say that the first attraction was the other way around. So ONDC was first attracted to me.
Okay.
but let me start at the beginning. So I started my career with a multinational. I spent more than 12 years with Procter & Gamble in India, in Taiwan and Singapore. Then I spent 7 years in China with the food business of PepsiCo. Mm-hmm. Then I came back to India. I was with Airtel for 3 years. And then I was in a group level role at the Godrej Group for 5 years.
Okay.
And after that, then I started consulting on my own. And it was in very different industries. Some were startups, some were mid-sized companies. Some were nearly approaching large-sized kind of companies. So across all these, I've had experience in products and services, B2C, B2B, and a variety of sectors. And so when ONDC was taking shape, the MD, Koshi, knew me and knew I was consulting and knew that I had been in various sectors. So he said, look, we're creating something for digital commerce. Why don't you have a look and give us your inputs? And Koshi is very good that way. He reaches out fairly wide, gets a lot of good input from people in industry and experience, and kind of uses the best of that to build what we're building. And that sort of percolates into the culture even today. So I gave him my first reaction. Some things sounded exciting. Some things didn't make sense to me. And now I hear the echoes of my earlier doubts being echoed in the questions I get when I do the outreach. So I had those same doubts myself. And then because I was also consulting, then Koshi said that, you could probably pick up one or two threads and work that for us as an external participant. At that time, there was no company, there was no organization, no formal structure. We were just a team that Koshi had cobbled together from various kind of spheres of his influence. And we were working and getting this done. And literally in a couple of months, it became evident what an incredible thing we were on our way to create it. So then the attraction flipped the other way around. And I said, you get to work on many transformational projects. In fact, at the time I joined telecom, telecom was transformational. 3G was just about to come and the whole data explosion was about to happen. So you do get a chance to work in transformational industries. but not often you get to work on a world first. And this truly is a world first. Nowhere in the world is there an open network for commerce. There's open network for many things, but not for commerce. And so to be part of something this transformational that is also world first was too good an attraction to turn down.
So true, Shirish. I think that was going to be one of my queries to you. You know, for me, this is a amazing and the most audacious project. And it's you're absolutely right. It's a world first. And I'll tell you why that, you know, I feel it is audacious or, you know, of that level. In 2017, you know, we came across, 2017, yeah, or late 2017, we came across a initiative. I've been involved in blockchain for a long time. And an initiative called Open Bazaar, which was a peer-to-peer decentralized marketplace. You know, I thought this was fantastic. It was an open source project, you know, but obviously it never took off, right? I mean, it's, I think the remnants are still there. You can find the code on GitHub and stuff like that. But the biggest problem they were facing, when I see the architecture that ONDC has envisaged, it's just mind-boggling, fantastic way of, kind of deconstructing the whole value chain in a way. But the biggest problem Open Bazaar faced was that they were going to be on Ethereum, right? So scale was a big issue. So just before we go into anything, you know, we spoke with, people about UPI, you know, Pramod spoke about it. It has like 8 legs of transactions. So essentially, when you see 10 billion transaction target, you're talking of 80 billion. ONDC in your mind, won't it be even bigger, huge in terms of transaction volume?
In transaction volume, it may not be, but certainly it'll be of the same order of magnitude. But who's going to quibble one versus the other? So very simply, because a purchase transaction is an area where you pay money, but you also pay money for things that are not a purchase transaction.
Okay.
So for example, if 3 of us went out for dinner, one of us paid the bill, and the other 2 pay that person who paid the bill by UPI, you've got 3 transactions done for what is essentially one purchase. So I do think that the payment volume is going to be bigger than transaction volume, even in the end state. But you could argue it the other way around, that if you're buying one item, there are 6 EMIs. So it actually is one transaction, but I'm making 6 payments. And we don't really need to argue, just accept that both are going to be very huge numbers and both will involve everyone. And let the, you know, who's higher fall wherever it falls, frankly, it doesn't matter.
And then I think the ripple effect of it is, I'm sure UPI and all also had it, but you know, they were essentially a pure transaction. This is actually like market making. So, of course, there is the payment leg, but you know, there is a whole, the payment leg involves another, there is a logistics leg. There's a whole lot of other moving parts, which the folks that who have built marketplaces have built it over 10 or 15 years of trial and error. Which is like crazy.
So Shirish, you mentioned just now that, you know, the whole attraction and flipping of attraction, right? And you had your doubts. So rather than we chancing upon those doubts of yours, what were your initial doubts about, ONDC that have materialized, let's say, some of them?
Yeah, sure. And it was actually essentially one, which is the, like everyone, I was used to the idea that e-commerce works when one party does everything, which is what makes it seamless, which is what we think makes it trustworthy. So all the good that we believe about e-commerce, we ascribe to the fact that it operates out of a platform structure where the buyer is present, seller is present, technology is present, everything is one. That's the only world we were used to. And because we hadn't gotten comfortable with that, almost the two got equated, that if it has to be this, then it is because it is that. Right? And so it's convenient, it's reliable, it's all of those things because it's all been put together by one. And that was my first reaction, saying, how will this separated thing ever work? That was my first and actually my most prominent doubt. The rest seemed to fall into place. And as I worked with the idea, because it's so different, it's not ONDC is not a ready solution. So nobody should look at it and say, now that ONDC has been explained, I know exactly what to do with it, because it's not a ready solution. ONDC is a capability. So if you understand the capability, then 3 of us can set about, say, what our imagination does, and we could come with 3 different answers as to what's possible. So I think that appreciation that so far I know e-commerce where there is a place where I will go. If I'm a seller, I will just go list. And if I shopper, I'll just go browse, select, add to cart. That's what I expect to do. Now, here also the same will be true, which is a seller should just expect to go and list, and a shopper should just simply expect to come, browse, select, and do all of that. The difference is actually therefore not visible and those interactions. The difference is actually what brings it together. And what brings it together is what creates the infinite possibilities that we currently don't see. So because the immediate journey hasn't changed, seemingly, and because the immediate interaction hasn't changed, therefore, what is so transformational does not become immediately evident.
Very true. No, it was, as I said, I found it so interesting when I look at ONDC, and now some of the videos are up on ONDC Academy. The way it has been deconstructed, the whole cycle, it now seems like it is falling in place. Yeah, it makes sense. There is a buyer side, seller side, and the logistic provider. But if I had to just ask, I know right now on Academy, I think seller side videos are up. I think things are coming up. Last I checked was about a month back. In my mind, there are some doubts about buyer and seller was very clear to me. The logistics part seemed, still not very clear. So in your mind, when you look at it and you are doing some pilots, are you in these three ecosystem of three players, let's say, if I had to put it, do you find some area more challenging from a business perspective itself than other?
Yeah, sure. I think a couple of areas are challenging. One area you mentioned rightly, logistics, and more importantly, logistic costs. Now, what's happening right now, and no surprise, is that whatever has already been digitized or formed part of some sort of a digital model finds it easier to connect with our network initially. And that's what's happened. So what's come to the network is what's already present somewhere. So the two primary delivery mechanisms, which is the intercity B2C delivery and the hyperlocal B2C delivery, are what have come to our network. They already are present in e-commerce, right? So it might not look like something different. But delivery is much more varied, right? And so how often do we poll on a friend's group that, is somebody traveling to Mumbai, I need something picked up and brought back, right? Now, you didn't ask the person there to courier it to you, nor did you commission a courier. You said, I need it escorted. Maybe it's an important document, right? So you have now arranged the delivery service. There are other times somebody will just send something by speed post. So we've been doing it all our lives. We've been identifying, choosing the right delivery mechanism and simply deploying it without thinking too much that, okay, I'm sending something or I'm receiving something. So we are two parties and one of us has engaged some third party who's going to do it, and we find it perfectly fine and we don't worry about it. We've done it all our lives. All we are now doing is the same thing will be enabled digitally on the network. So a buyer will select a seller for whatever they're looking for. Either the seller will say, yes, I can deliver it to you and I have my own delivery service. Or the seller will say, I don't have my own delivery service, but I will find it from ONDC network and I'll send it to you. And we've not yet enabled this, but that will also soon come, where a buyer will say, no, don't worry. You just simply pack it and keep it ready. I will arrange for a pickup and they will come and deliver it to me, right? Now, each of them is an option and each one of them solves for something different. Now, there are companies, for example, that do a milk run. So you will collect, and we did that recently for our tomato and onion orders. It's not an emergency, but if you want things at a low cost, you place your order. And then we will collect all the orders and next day somebody will go and just simply drop them off. That makes it far cheaper than point-to-point individual delivery, which will become more expensive. Now, we've always known that from the delivery side. In fact, the industry calls it a milk run. You literally go multiple point and you drop it off. But there's never been a milk run on the buyer side, right? Now, we do shopping in the pre-digital era. We went to the neighborhood market. Maybe we bought some stationery. Maybe we bought some garments. Maybe we bought some food. We bought multiple items in a single trip and we came back because it was efficient. You didn't make a different trip for each item. And that's where neighborhood markets had stores of all kinds, because in a single journey, you could do it. Today, that mechanism doesn't exist. But imagine if you could place an order in 5 neighborhood stores, tell them to pack it and keep it ready. Then you click a single order to a delivery company and say, here are my 5 orders, go pick them up and drink it. You now mimicked what you used to do and you made logistics costs affordable. The other thing is that we have a variety of mechanisms for delivery. And let me use an extreme B2B example. So I do this at my outreach presentations. I ask people, what comes to mind when you think B2B logistics? And people say train, trucks, aircraft, shipping. And then I flash a picture and the picture is of one gentleman on a tricycle. There is a cart behind him, and in the cart are a whole bunch of cartons. That's B2B. There is a bullock cart with a longish bullock in front, a longish cart, and there are about 15-20 pipes on it. That's also B2B. Right? Now, as a country, as an economy, we have developed these various delivery models because depending on the buyer, seller, and the economics of that transaction, there is a model that suits. Sometimes I will need a truck because I have maybe 5,000 pipes to deliver, but that costs a certain thing and it works only at that scale. If I have 3 pipes to deliver, a truck is way too expensive. But if I find a handcart vendor who might take 2 hours to get there instead of 10 minutes, but he will get there and it'll be affordable. That's also a solution. So in order for commerce to work, right, you need multiple kinds of solutions to be easily flexible. So logistics definitely is one huge area where a lot needs to be done, because all marketplaces have tried to build something that is easily scalable, as they call it. This is not easily scalable, right? Where will you find handcart vendors? But it is part of our network today. It is present across the country. So we have to find a way to bring what exists to the network, because that makes it more affordable than if we try and manufacture a system, which becomes far more expensive, and we are seeing that. The second major area that I would talk about is digitizing the undigitized, because India is a very low penetration e-commerce market. You know, you and I might shop all the time, and at a drop of a hat, we'll just open an application and do something. But from an India perspective, e-commerce is a niche activity. It's only a 6% penetration in the overall consumer industry, less than 2% in B2B, and less than 1% of sellers are estimated to be digitized. Now, that's a huge thing to be done. In some cases, it may not be very complicated. So if I'm, let's say, manufacturing pencils, I may have like 10 grades of pencil. That's a very easy catalog to make. But what if I'm making dolls? So each time I'm making doll, I'm doing it with the material I have. My second doll may not look anything like the first one. Or I'm a weaver. I'm weaving a shawl today, I'm weaving a shawl tomorrow. I don't weave it exactly the same. Right? So now that needs a picture, that needs a description. Now who's going to do that? So developing the ability to include these people commercially, from a cost standpoint, the network will support. But the cost of onboarding is not small, and the education and the training required. So once you've taken a picture of, let's say, a particular shawl and you put it and people place the order, then if you're not going to make that weave again, you have to change the picture. Or if you're leaving that picture there and somebody places the order, you should know how to make exactly that weave all over again. Now, for that, there needs to be a certain amount of discipline in the makers, which today they don't need to. Right? So if I'm a weaver and I'm selling in my neighborhood, how does it matter what weave I make today? Whatever I make, I will be putting on my cart, and whoever is looking will decide whether they want it or not. But when I'm doing it as a remote system, now that's a new discipline that I have to start doing. Or a Kirana store has to keep track of, now do I have the stock of each of these items? So when I accept an order, I actually have that stock. In a physical environment, he doesn't worry about it because the usual stuff he always has. And if he doesn't, he will tell the customer, "Aap ek minute ruko, chotu bagal se jaake lega." He'll give him some money, and he will not lose that customer. How do you do that digitally, right? And so people will have to learn how to adjust the behavior to this new kind of way of doing things, because it does require an adjustment. And so these are the two, I would say, the big ticket items that really require solving dramatically in a variety of ways. There's no one single answer. How do we solve for the complicated world of commerce by enabling a really wide variety of logistic choices in terms of scale, capability, and cost? And how do we ensure, and how do we make it easy for this huge world of makers, artisans, farmers, craftsmen, small industries, all to be able to come on board? And a lot of them have no clue how their product sells, because they've always sold it to some middleman. Right? A farmer goes to a mandi and sells it. He does not know how it went from that mandi to a processor, or that mandi to another mandi, and eventually the consumer. He just knows I have to go and sell it here. Similarly, a small industries will sell it to a distributor. They don't know who the end customer is. So now for them to be able to activate demand by themselves is also a new territory. So these are some of the subjects that I think collectively as an ecosystem, we are recognizing and building. And so as we build the academy, today we build the academy on some basic 101 operational principles. But over a period of time, we'll have to build additional subjects, build that knowledge. And more importantly, others should expect to join the fray and also contribute to this. So this is literally democratization at its best. For the people who are doing buying and selling, by the people who are doing buying and selling, of the people who are doing buying and selling. So it's really the true democratization of e-commerce.
The thing is that, you know, typically when we were looking, all the other things that have been done so far have, you know, you do it at population scale, and you can scale that thing, or you design for identity for everyone, you design for payments. But just what you described is so complex, in the sense that, you know, and so varied, that, you know, that you said the weaver, the picture, the stock, you know, what's available today, you know, how do you buy? For each person or set of people might be so varied, you know. So somehow I would imagine that whole design for population scale becomes very difficult, because you're not scaling one thing exponentially. It is like a many-to-many. Everything has to be at population scale. And it needs to obviously at some point done work seamlessly. We can imagine 3-5 years, whatever it will take. On the other side, maybe there is an opportunity for technologists, service providers to now enable this, because so there is a whole market or an ecosystem waiting or nascent and which will service this. But I mean, I was just thinking that, you know, now we have been kind of here, all of you guys talking about ad population, but you can add population scale, you know, a way to send data or, you know, give an identity. But this is pretty much credit has to be at population scale, risk management has to be at population scale, logistics. I mean, just catalog management. I mean, you know, who should get credit? I mean, it's like, it's pretty much like the mother of all problems, literally.
So, you know, there is no exact parallel, right?
Correct.
And I can throw out a few kind of not exact, but sort of approximate ones. So think about radio, right? There is AM, there is FM, there is news, there is entertainment, etc. Now, there are multiple channels. Now, as a receiver, I will take my radio and I will tune to whichever channel I want and I will start receiving that information. So in part, commerce needs to be flexible. That I don't have a single, you know, delivery that everybody just simply have to follow. There should be a way where people can select what they receive. Right? And so if you enable that mechanism, then anything becomes possible. Right? So once I have a radio instrument, which has AM band and FM band and shortwave band, as it used to be in the old days, then in that one device, now I can receive all the, you know, audio communication that exists, whether it is news, whether it is education classes, whether it is movie songs, whether it is theater, etc. I can receive it all. So that's what is really needed to solve that population scale, which is you don't create solutions, you create capabilities. And if you create capabilities, then let people build their own solutions. Only then can you get to population scale. You cannot get to population scale by just creating a product. And honestly, the companies that have brought e-commerce to this country, they're not, you know, newbies and people who are just, you know, learning their ropes. They're stalwarts. They're big companies, stalwarts, who've built something huge worldwide. Now, if despite that capability and that depth and that financial strength, you get to only 5-6%, that tells you something. And so that's why the solution cannot be a solution. The solution has to be a capability for the solution.
So, very true. Absolutely, completely agree with what you're saying, Shirish. I was thinking, you know, so one part is the technology. I think probably you can talk a little bit about a roadmap. Probably it is already there. I felt the bigger challenge probably for ONDC would be education, right? Because when I looked at the three-part, this kind of a model, and I saw that you are absolutely right. You created a capability. Now, you expect the seller side folks to go to that weaver and kind of help him get onboarded, right? To put his pictures or you know, stock management and all that stuff. But where would ONDC, I know ONDC Academy is there, but probably you need feet on street going to, you know, if we really are talking of, you know, tier 3 and 4 cities of India, is there something that ONDC will be doing at a kind of a, if it was a tiered approach, you will do the base layer and the next, and expectation is seller side and buyer side companies will take care of the rest? Or how does that work, the education part of it?
Let me ask you a different question. Right? Let's take two networks. Let's take telephone networks. Let's take the internet. So who put feet on the street on the ground so that everybody would join the internet or get an internet connection? Who put feet on the street to ensure everybody would buy a phone, get a SIM card and have a
card? Correct. The Airtels of the phone.
They didn't put feet on the street. They had outlets.
Correct.
But they didn't put feet on the street. Right? So people figured out that it was something they wanted to explore, would walk to the nearby kiosk and, you know, then fill out that customer acquisition form in those days. Now, of course, everything is based on other. But there was a demand that was getting created. The telecom companies supplied the demand. But where did the demand get created? Because demand got created use case by use case. In the days when mobile telephony was 16 rupees a minute, only senior, you know, people in corporations had a connection. The average person didn't. As it became a little bit more affordable, some more people did. Maybe all people who had working lives did. And little by little, as it became more affordable, plus it became not a means of just having phone calls and then phone calls and messages. Now it also became a source of entertainment. That brought a different set of people. So any network and any capability grows use case by use case. How did the internet grow? Probably the first use case, or rather the first reason why somebody could even use it, were the first browsers and search engines. Because without a search engine, how do you do anything on the internet? After that came free email, right? So now you can send messages to folks without having to pay for email. Of course, you have to pay for the internet, but at least the email part was free. Then came queue busting services. You could do your banking or ticketing, doing online without having to go and stand in queue. Then broadband came. So pictures, video started coming. Social media came. Then phones decided to add internet to phone devices. It was earlier only on computers and laptops. Then telecom companies dropped the rate. So how internet spread across the world is partly technology, partly user experience, partly content, partly devices, partly telecom providers. Variety of people have done it. And we went through one.com boom where people attempted to drive a lot of traffic. That failed. And then organically it picked up again. And there have been a few, you know, big companies that have come from that era. So a network growth cannot be tightly managed by any one single central entity. What you have to ensure that it is useful, that it is capable of solving for many things, and then leave it to people to figure out which solution who wants to have energy and solve for today. Right. And so we are seeing that even in a network. We can't tell you that, okay, we've taken Indian economy as a whole. We have ranked the economic sectors. Now we're taking the top three. We're talking to all the companies that make that up. That would be a very organized way in which a single corporation would do it. But that does not necessarily mean that the topmost companies or the biggest sector have a lot of enthusiasm for ONDC today. In fact, many times things happen quite differently. I have been with an organization where we were bringing in a new product and we thought it was going to be a big city item, especially given the cost and the existing service that that was there. Next thing we know, it's tier three, tier four towns, which are just simply flying through the roof. And in fact, very quickly, they overtook the big cities. So where things take place, you know, it's hard to tell. Where did mobile payments take off? They took off in India, not in an advanced country. And so the reason it was because there was a gap, and the gap got filled by a piece of technology and people adopted it. So I think the path to growth is not going to be easy and predictable, but it will take place. And I think multiple parties will have to contribute in their own way. So it's not going to be really our feet on street. Yes, we have feet on street today. We do a lot of explaining. I am doing this podcast, and I'm hoping that in 3 years' time, there'll be at least, you know, 50,000 people who are doing podcasts. None of them an ONDC employee. Because by that time, people know what it is.
Correct.
So it's when that stage comes, right? Who taught you how to use WhatsApp? Who taught me how to join Facebook? Who taught somebody how to do Google search? Nobody. It was there and people taught people, and you asked around and says, oh, what is this? Or you suggested, and it spread. Right? And so when ONDC, joining ONDC and doing business on ONDC reaches that level of simplicity and familiarity is when it will take off. And there is no way any organization, including, I would say, the government of India, that can go and teach every single trader and every single shopper, this is how you do it. They can't. And least of all, a private sector company like us with limited resources and who also is a non-profit organization. So I think we have to keep seeding it, keep looking for solutions, and there will be use cases that will trigger the inflections. And so when such a use case comes, there will be a jump. And then another use case comes and there will be a jump. Sometimes it is environmental factors, right? We all know the impact that demonetization had on adopting mobile payments. We've seen, well, it's not a big jump, but it's still some fillip that online ordering got because of the COVID-related lockdown. Okay. So sometimes there are unplanned external events that might push it along. And so it will be a series of jumps, not all predictable, that will help do it. So our contribution as FOS is going to be an initial thrust only, but only a small part of what is eventually needed.
But I get this whole thing about this, the organic nature of this, because obviously that's how the network effect should play out. I was just wondering, in the period that you've been around, what has been maybe a singular buyer or a seller experience that, you know, somebody who came in and said, okay, now I'm putting in a search and, you know, that ONDC protocol goes and 10 places and, you know, now I have got much better choice or something else, or maybe a seller who said that, oh, you know, now I can sell much better. I mean, is there anything, or is it too early for any such case studies to emerge, or have you had some initial?
It is too early for that level of a, I haven't seen this ever before. And if you think about, right, the early days of the internet, the information that was there was sort of already known to us. It took a while before information we didn't know started appearing. So those solutions will take time. Or think about the camera on the mobile phone when it first came. It was a very, very basic camera. So the digital camera world continued to exist. But as that improved over time, suddenly now that world is pretty much gone. So I think things take time to evolve. And we should anticipate a similar thing will happen here, which is one by one, things will start coming. They will get better. New ideas will be found. New things that couldn't be conceived before will be found. And so the only reason we can talk about cloud computing and cloud-based services is because internet is everywhere and data is affordable. You couldn't speak about cloud services 20 years ago because the two parts were not there. Internet penetration was low and costs were high. Now you can. So it requires something to exist for something else to exist. And these are, you know, they build up on top of each other. And so we anticipate that commerce will also go through these ways. The first easy version would be just digitize the seller and connect them. That's the easy first part. But once sellers are present, then you will find additional ideas. And okay, now that everyone is present, what more could we do?
So Shirish, this probably brings us what we just talked, you know, at the start, the economics of ONDC. So if you could briefly touch upon, you know, since it's a capability that you are creating, but what are the incentives for people to start adopting this capability?
I think the reference should be everywhere where we've seen networks, right? So we've seen the UPI network. So we've seen how wide that gets and what the costs are. We've seen a telecom network. Of course, where it started, it was very different. But now where it has gotten to in terms of its reach and therefore its affordability is very, very dramatically different. So that's what our anticipation with ONDC also is, that it will be a network. In order for it to reach everyone, it has to be extremely affordable. And it should not be artificially, forcibly made affordable. Right? So a lot of e-commerce today is artificial affordability. Because, you know, you want people to migrate from physical buying behavior onto this. I remember in the early days, taxi on ride hailing applications were cheaper than the real life auto rickshaw. Right? So it was a no-brainer. Same with a lot of product categories on the other kind of applications. So these are more to shift an existing behavior to another, but eventually it should self-sustain. And there are many things that are now not present as a cost on the network. So if you were building an entire system yourself, right? Let's say you had a wonderful idea of a certain kind of experience, then you would first create the technology for that experience. You would test it, validate it. Yes, the experience works. Then whichever other two parties you want to provide that service and to avail of that service, then you would have to put feet on the street and teach them and evangelize them, get them to spend money to join your network. Then you would have to spend money to acquire buyers of that service or that product. And so you have to spend a lot if you have to do everything yourself. Now imagine, if the sellers are already present, the buyers are already present, and once you scale the idea, you simply plugged it into a place where both are present. Now you don't have to spend that money to acquire. So your cost of creating new business ideas has gone down dramatically. Now, if a seller is simply connecting to a network which has a lot of buyers, there is not much spending to be done in acquiring customers to the network. So if they're looking for your product, they will find you. So now your only spend is like the good old-fashioned days, which is get more people to look for you. But if people are already looking for you, you don't have to spend to be found, right? A spend to be captured, right? So you, today, brands are spending money three times. You're spending money to be known. Then you spend money to be, when you're searching, so you should show up in searches. And when search points to e-commerce platforms, then I must be found on the e-commerce platform too. So you're spending three times, right? And so I think some of that will shift back towards essentially spending on being known. And once somebody wants to look for you, they'll find you in a variety of ways because there'll be multiple buyer and applications that, you know, that can get to you. So I think that's how I see kind of the evolution taking place, which is it'll become a world where buyers and sellers will drive the choices much more. The intermediaries will help. They will benefit, but they will benefit from scale. And ONDC is the biggest example of, you know, providing on the basis of scale. So currently the network is free. We are not charging anything. There is much discussion as to, I mean, we do anticipate, we've always said that someday we will charge. We've not declared when and how much. But the principle always is that when we do start, we'll first, of course, pre-announce it so people are ready for it. And it'll be so small that in an individual transaction, it'll be negligible. You know, I again go back to telecom and UPI as two reference points where you see that. The other is, what is the other cost in the system? Currently, as it is envisaged, we anticipate that the seller application that onboards sellers will charge some fee. And likewise, the buyer application, which brings buyers to the network, will charge some finder's fee, whatever you want to call it. Now, these two fees currently on the network are in low single-digit percentages. Applications are kind of feeling their way around. But market forces will eventually determine where it flows. Right? Now, that's very different from what platforms charge. So the fact that you have less cost itself, because no one party is doing everything, right? So if you have, let's say, a large buyer application, you're not bringing on the sellers. Sellers have been brought by somebody else. So now you've got an additional revenue stream for the cost of putting additional lines of codes. How much would you want to charge for that to get remunerated and recover your costs and even make some profit on it? Not much. And so because of that nature, where we're connecting everyone rather than requiring one party to make everything, is why we believe that the e-commerce overall as a solution will be more affordable. And once you make it easy for a variety of solutions to join, and I gave you some examples from logistics, right? That if I have only three pipes to send, can I find a handcart delivery instead of looking for a truck? And if I can, it becomes more affordable, right? Versus I'm booking a truck and the truck guy says that, oh, there are only three pipes, let's give them a discount to get that order. That's not a sustainable practice. So I think that's what our viewpoint on the commercials is, that democratization, which allows broader competition. So one part is due to competition. Another part is due to lesser costs of doing e-commerce itself, because we've taken that out of the system. And then importantly, you can migrate your existing trusted relationship. So we have sellers today who are encouraging their existing customers to buy through ONDC. Right? They're already your existing customers. There's no acquisition cost. And so you're now building an online reputation based on your existing customer base, which will stand you in good stead when new customers come looking for you. So that's kind of the perspective on commercials, that it should be inherently sustainably more affordable for everyone.
So I'm sure you've been asked this question hundreds of times. So what's the reaction of the existing marketplaces to this? I mean, what are the Amazons and the Flipkarts and the people who already have these huge marketplaces which they've spent years and years building? I mean, seeing it as a threat? Are they going to jump onto the bandwagon? Are they seeing this as a way to expand the market? I mean, what's their reaction to this?
So whatever they have told us has been positive. And that's been the reaction when even they've had sessions with the ministry and so on. They have always been positive. In the end, the proof is in the action. So Meesho is live on the network as a buyer application. Ola is live on our network as a buyer application. Ola is enabling food ordering on our network through this regular Ola cab hailing application. Snapdeal is live on the network. So you have some participants who have already come live. That's part of the answer. The other is companies from these groups are joining. So eCart from the Flipkart group and so on. Amazon is also looking to bring one of their logistics plays into it. So people are moving forward with components. And with time, we will see where it goes. But so far, at least the stated reactions are positive, and we're seeing it in some actions.
In fact, like you mentioned, just given such a low penetration, that if you are able to shift that needle and if the penetration just doubles from where it is a huge market. I mean, the market itself is huge, so I don't... Anything that enables that, yeah.
And in a much more affordable way. Today, for incumbents to grow, double their existing scale will be very, very expensive. Even their current operations are expensive. And there are financial challenges. But if you have to double it on, because the next round of growth will come from even more fragmented territories. So that's going to be even more expensive to serve. And it will be challenging for them. Whereas an open network offers them an opportunity to grow efficiently in ways that they would not be able to do themselves.
So the other one I had is that, so we actually were fortunate enough to meet the Irish ambassador. And since then, we've had several, and we have a few conversations and a lot of, listening in the news, that a lot of these India Stack components are now being actually are instruments or levers of foreign policy, or the fact that, you know, India can now provide to the world, you know, we can tell people how digital identity is done. We can tell people how payments happens. Vaccination was another big example. So yeah. While ONDC obviously is still very nascent to that effect, but what's been the general international reaction of, I'm sure India is not isolated in having fragmented markets. I'm sure, 90% of the world must be fragmented markets only. So what's been the general reaction? Is it wait and watch? Are people kind of asking you to?
The formal engagement and announcement of ONDC is still very limited.
Okay.
In the technology circles, a lot more is known because there the word has spread. But in the, if you think about, let's say, the policymakers or governments in other countries, it's gone in a limited way. There has been some progress. There has been some interest. And in fact, we are working on international leg to ONDC also. Hopefully, within about a month or so, we'll have our first test order go through, an international one that actually came out of cooperation of Indian government and one other. That work has already begun. So we started B2C. We are also in B2B. Similarly, we started domestic. We're also now exploring international, starting with an export first. So the expectation is that this should be capable of much broader footprint than just within the borders of this country.
I think before we start wrapping up, I think this is one question. Maybe if I'm a seller or a buyer and I want to leverage ONDC, or if I'm building out today, if you are already digitized, I'll do something. But if I'm doing something, what's the best way or what's the right way to leverage ONDC it's like being digital first, right? So if I want to be ONDC first, if I start building something today, then how can I be kind of ONDC ready or ONDC compliant? Or what's the best way to plan to leverage this in the best way possible?
So let me separate the availability with performance. So let's talk about availability. How do I become available on the network?
Okay.
It's actually very simple. Your catalog needs to be digitized. Whatever you sell, there needs to be a digital version of it, a picture, description, et cetera, et cetera. With every sector, we have specifications. So for this sector, what is the minimum information that must be present? And then what is the optional information, which is desirable, not necessarily requirement. So we've defined that for every sector. So somebody must build a catalog. You must have a mechanism for updating your inventory. And so once those practices are present, then what you need to do is you have your catalog and inventory hosted on a seller application.
Okay.
The seller application will provide you with the other components, the order management and all the other components, so that then when there is an order from the network, you know how to accept it, you know how to respond to it, etc. That'll be a simple interface that they will provide. So the act of selling is simply partnering with the seller application or the seller network participant, more accurately, to be able to digitize your operations and make them visible to the network. That's really it. Now, you'll obviously have to have a bank account because money will flow digitally. So if you don't have one, although I'll be surprised if somebody of that nature doesn't. But if you don't, you must have a bank account because in the end, everything has to flow digitally. So that's a very, very simple step. It's not very complicated, but it does require time and effort because depending on the number of things you sell and their variability, digitizing that and doing that well may require effort. So that's the availability side of it. Once you are live, then you have to do well. And doing well is not a digital question, right? It's a general question. So if you go to the neighborhood market, which has 10 restaurants, all 10 don't do equally well. Now, that's no fault of the footfall in that market. That's no fault of the infrastructure of the market. That's really the appeal of that individual product. So being available is one thing. Doing well is an outcome of several things.
True.
Do you have a good product or service to begin with? Does it have some advantages vis-a-vis comparable one? Maybe you can deliver it faster, or maybe yours is better quality, or maybe yours is cheaper. Maybe you have variants that others don't have. Something has to be, compelling
true,
for somebody to buy it from you.
That's very true.
Right? If you have nothing, then it'll be very, very challenging. But as long as you do that, so the idea is that now, moment you find there is even a little bit of a difference between what's available and what you can make, now you have an opportunity to scale that up far more easily. So this should fuel a lot more innovation. This should fuel a lot of entrepreneurial spirit in the country. And make it possible. But being available is easy. Being successful, a different story.
Very, very well put. I think that's true even of social media. I can create a profile in social media. That doesn't mean I'm going to get a million followers if I have nothing useful to say.
Exactly.
Anything, Shirish, but just before we wrap up, anything you would like to highlight, for the listeners of the podcast, anything, any message or something that can help ONDC in some shape or form?
Yes, I will ask your viewers to devote at least half an hour, if not more, to really understand ONDC. This is not a one sentence. You cannot read an executive summary and get it. You really have to get into it, understand its implications. The best way is we do a weekly public broadcast every Tuesday. So feel free to join that. We also have a video on our website which explains this in detail. It's 8.5 minutes long. So it's long by online video standards, but there's a lot to explain. But I would encourage people to do that and see it a few times and think of what ONDC is not as a product, as a capability, and apply it to your sphere, and you will see ideas pop immediately. Just 2 days ago, we spoke to a public sector company and I was quite surprised that they were even interested in the first place. And I was flabbergasted just in that one conversation, how many ideas they came up with. So I had some thoughts and suggestions. I said, I'll just give them as a thought starter. They were just at it. And they finally said, we need to just take a pause and just list down all these opportunities you have, and we'll come back to you, and then you tell us which of these are possible. So it's really that conversation. It's a leadership conversation. It's not that, you know, under the head of the business, there is a sales and marketing head, under whom there is an e-commerce person, under whom there is, you know, a channel specialist. And so boss, just go and do something on ONDC. That's not going to work. It's a leadership conversation. The leadership of the organization has to understand its opportunity and literally plan your growth strategy on the basis of what they now understand, of which one very small component, maybe an easy first component, but a very small component would be to use ONDC as a channel for sales. That it is. But if you just think about it like that, then it is way too limited. So please engage at a leadership level. Please invest some amount of time. I promise you it will be worth it.
And I can totally corroborate that, because I have seen at least 1 month back, there were whatever videos were available on ONDC Academy. Fantastic quality, very, very well explained. So I can personally say that, you know, yes, I completely agree with you. It's 8.5 minutes. It's not long at all. So I think point taken. I think people should, and that is kind of the first step. And as we say, first step will lead to, you know, the whole journey. But yeah, let's take that first step. Anything, Samiran, you wanted to add?
No. I think this is absolutely fantastic. And I mean, you always feel that you know when you read, but you know, I think it opens your mind when you actually just have this conversation also, and opens your mind to possibilities. And like I said, you know, we will also love to help in any way possible and spread the word. And, you know, hopefully others will get inspired to do more with the network.
And honestly, I can tell you, Shirish, so now that I am in Europe and our startup has, you know, the blockchain we created, it's a kind of an Indo-French kind of a thing. So when I speak about ONDC, I mean, they find it a mind-boggling initiative. I mean, everyone, so in France, I mean, the people whomsoever I've spoken with till now about ONDC, as a matter of fact, I gave them some of those ONDC Academy links, and I told them, check it out. I mean, you know, learn from it. Everyone felt it was a fantastic initiative. I mean, and hopefully we'll see it grow very soon. One last thing, maybe before, as a information is, how many, what is kind of the immediate roadmap? I mean, I know it is live in, I think last I heard, 25 cities or something. And
so it really depends on, you know, how you define what being live means. We have sellers in more than 300 cities. We've got orders at some time or the other in more than 200. If we look at past 1 week, every day getting an order from a city, we're nearly 50 of them. If you look at a 3 month, you know, consistent 100 orders a month, every month, then that's probably about 30 or 35. So depending on what scale you use to judge live, but it's already evident that little by little, just organically, it's spreading.
And that brings us to the end of another episode of Three Techies Banter. If you liked our banter, then please share this episode. Do follow and subscribe our show on whichever platform you listen. We are available on all major podcasting platforms. We are also on YouTube now, so do subscribe and follow us there. If you're on Apple Podcasts, and I think even on Spotify now, you can leave us a review. That will also help us a lot. Thank you once again. We keep sending us your feedback. Until the next time. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Three Techies Banter. Just wanted to say a big thank you to Amazon Music once again for partnering with us on this episode of the podcast.